Thank you for downloading this podcast from policyreview.tv.
I know some faces here, because some people here have done the Leadership for Reputation course, which I do with the Association of Colleges, so very much about how it should be at the leadership level. So you'll see some familiar slides, but not all, I hope. Well, I know they're not all, but there are one or two familiar slides. So yes, reputation is really at the heart of this, and a very important area to consider. It's slow, isn't it? Sorry, it's slow. I shall try to... That we are. I hope it doesn't leap on now. So the first question to ask you is, what do your students want? And I think this is a very important thing, but it's a joke in a way, because I remember some couple of years ago when students were demonstrating. I always like to see students demonstrating because it means they're awake. But when they were demonstrating outside Devon County Council, because I live in Cornwall, so it's always funny when things happen in Devon, and they were all shouting, "What do we want?" And they all replied, "A future. When do we want it? Now." and it was hilarious. And the journalist didn't see the joke at all. I was absolutely creased up. But of course, what they actually want in the future is a reputation, it's going to say. And because that's the most important thing for them, and that's why they're coming to college, and that's why they seek you out. And how are they going to seek you out? Best of all, is your reputation. Your reputation is going to become part of theirs. Where did you go to college? Oh, there. Oh, that's not so good, is it? And so the first thing that they're going to do when they start to put their reputation together is choose somebody, an organisation that's already got a good one. So that they can ally themselves to that and become part of it. And it's vital that you develop your reputation along the right lines. And some of the things have already been said, but there is always a lot more to say about reputation, because it's such a vital and important aspect. Marketing doesn't necessarily help your reputation. Marketing, my big problem with marketing, and I'll just get it out of the way, when you're marketing, you create consumers. And now we've even heard the customer word this morning, which I can understand, and it's very much part of the scene. But if you create consumers, they behave differently. Students have to take responsibility for their own learning and their futures. Consumers don't take so much responsibility, and if you treat people like consumers, then don't expect them to take so much personal responsibility in their engagement with you. And I've worked a lot in the health service, and consumers are more likely to sue you when things go wrong. Patients will take part in their own health, and you need students to take responsibility with you in the partnership for their future. And so, therefore, by starting off on that relationship building front, where you're in it together, you're much more likely to succeed rather than turning them into consumers from the beginning. There's enough other people in the world turning young people into consumers, and it doesn't do them or us much good, I don't think. So don't join in that game. That's enough about marketing. So what is reputation? Well, obviously, it's what you do. It's what you say, but as was rightly said at the beginning by Alison, it's what others say about you. That's really the heart of what reputation is, what people talk, who are talking about you say. And it's everything. It's everything from the muddy car park to the fine reception hall and the way that people behave and the crisp packets on the floor and all of those things. They're all coming together to create your reputation and to build it for the future. Public relations, I have to do this, is a surprise to most people, I think, that public relations is about three things. It's about truth, concern for the public interest, and dialogue. That's not widely known. People think public relations is about spinning a bit of a yarn. But, of course, if you're not telling the truth and you're found out, that's your reputation said goodbye to for a very long time. So truth must be at the heart of the messages. Concern for the public interest. I'm sad to see that the CSR session has gone, because that's a big area of work that I do, especially in the Middle East. Actually, I do it. I'm off soon to do a big project on CSR with business leaders in the Middle East. It's a vital part of relationship building, your social responsibility, your local community, and friendships with them are very important, and understanding how that works is really matters. And in public relations, if you're not concerned, very often I hope you all have fully qualified public relations people who know exactly what they're doing and are working professionally, and they'll be a nuisance to you. They will be banging on the door saying, you can't do that. The parking round here is appalling. The poor local residents haven't got enough room to park because of our staff using the roads and all sorts of things, and the litter on the streets, and all the things that you bring to a community that will harm your reputation. It's the PR person's job to keep on sorting that out and making sure it's right. Dialogue. The listening point is vital. You've got to be listening as well as speaking. And putting out messages, because other words, you're not having a conversation. Marketing tends to be one way. You put out messages, you research the effect of those messages, and you hone them down and put them out again, maybe differently. But in public relations, we're in a permanent conversation with our publics, with the people that matter. And so therefore, dialogue is also another thing that sets us apart from other communication industries, where perhaps things are one way and there's maybe a bit more one-sided relationship going on. So those are the things that set PR apart. Tim Travis Healy said this. He's 90 this year, so I thought I must give him a plug. Bless him. He was thrilled that I told him. I still quote him when I met him recently. And he still deserves it. So why reputation? These are a few slides that explain it. This is taken from the Edelman Trust Barometer. It's free, it's online, it's just been updated actually, because they do it every year. They ask people, who do you trust? And you'll see in 2006 in the US, financial performance was third. Money mattered much more, how you behaved with finances. Now it's in 2010, gone down to the bottom. The things at the top are things about are reputational things. So transparent and honest practices are the thing that makes people trustworthy in society now. And how do people know if you're trustworthy and honest? How do you put that across? As mentioned earlier, the value point. Your values matter really importantly. Company I can trust. High quality products and services coming third. And again, this is something that's focused on a great deal. But how honest are you, and how trustworthy are you? Come even above that, and that's your reputation. And so that needs a lot more work than it often gets. I think if you think about your senior leadership team, you probably spend a lot of time talking about money. But don't forget that there should be a standing item on every agenda for your director of PR communication to come in and talk about the reputation and the impact that your work and strategies are having on it. Because that's where your reputation really lies. And this, again, this is Ipsos Mori in this country. Personal qualities sought in public leaders, right up there: honesty, trustworthy, good communicator. This is all the work of the PR team, and far above being efficient, which is at the bottom, which is where you spend a lot of your planning time. So PR is about reputation. That's its core purpose. Survey of the top 250 companies basically revealed that damage to reputation was the thing that they fear most. It's the biggest business risk for managers now. But it's PricewaterhouseCoopers survey. And so the businesses are feeling that, and it's just the same in the public sector. Your reputation is your most valuable asset. It's something that has to be earned. You cannot buy it. You can't throw money at it. You've got to earn it. You can throw money at behaving better, at making the place look nicer, at treating people, the staff, getting that relationship right. But you can't buy the reputation. You earn it through all those good behaviours. Henry Ford said, you can't build a reputation on what you're going to do, But it's the result of former action. So you start today. You can't keep thinking, oh, well, we haven't got a very good one. We'll leave that till later. As soon as you start, then you start to build up a good reputation. But it does have an expectational quality. I mean, know about MPs and politicians telling us what they're going to do. It doesn't help their reputation at all because we roll our eyes somewhat when we hear those promises. It's what they've done that really makes the difference, and it's exactly the same for us. But it does have an expectational quality in terms of what might come next. The better your reputation, the better people expect of you, and the higher standards they expect. Satisfaction. Sorry, I've done three now. Satisfaction, this is a saying of mine. Satisfaction is the difference between expectation and experience. And this has been alluded to by the two former speakers, and it's such an important point. What do people expect of you? Complaints has been mentioned, and the complaints are a very strong indicator of what people expected and what they got. It doesn't mean you're awful. John Lewis gets probably far more complaints than Lidl, I would say. I definitely know that Marks and Spencer's got more complaints than Woolworths. That wasn't because Marks and Spencer's were rubbish. It was because people expected them to be good. And disappointment in your expectations actually leads you to write that letter of complaint, get out the green ink, much more readily than expecting it to be bad and having a bad experience. So the expectational demands that are put on people by the marketing department could be very complicated for when people arrive and it isn't what they expected. Remember, the British Rail said we're getting there, and we knew they weren't, and it created problems for satisfaction levels. In the NHS, where I've worked for many years, they get a lot of compliments. 5,000, the trust I was working in, 5,000 compliments to 500 complaints. Because people expected it to be awful, thanks to the Daily Mail, mostly. They probably thought they were going to get MRSA and die because they'd gone in through the hospital doors. And so therefore they were pleasantly surprised, so they were moved to write and say, gosh, it was clean. It was all the things I wasn't expecting. So when you get if you're getting a lot of compliments and few complaints, that means that you've got a mismatch in what's going out in terms of people's expectations, so you need to put that right. Reputation is about perception. So to acquire a reputation that's positive, enduring and resilient, which is the one we all want, managers have got to invest heavily in building and maintaining good relationships. I'm going to talk about relationships in a minute, because it's the relationships you have that actually make and develop your reputation above all things. That's the people who are going to speak well of you. Those are the third-party endorsements that are all important. And Charles Fonbrun, who said that, proposed four factors that help to build reputation: credibility, reliability, trustworthiness, and responsibility. And they relate quite neatly back, I think, to the three things that PR is about: truth, concern for the public interest, and dialogue, because they're all wrapped up in that. But we'll have a look at those in a bit of detail. Credibility, obviously, are you believed? What is it based upon? Well, obviously, the British Rail point, the message matching the experience builds credibility. The coming on television at the end of a dreadful day and smiling through, looking as if there's nothing gone wrong, isn't going to help your credibility. The principal hiding, not getting on the plate where they belong, isn't going to help your credibility. It has to come from the top. This is very frustrating. Reliability, obviously, is wrapped up with that. Have you produced the good students you're promising? Are the staff reliable? Do they turn up on time? Do people actually deliver what's expected of them? Trustworthiness starts to get tough. How you manage things when things go wrong. is vital here. I do a lot of crisis management work and have several college clients. I have several college clients who actually don't have crises because we work on issues management, which is my favourite tool in public relations, to help them to avoid having a crisis. But things go wrong and you can't. I recently had a college who's I terrified Fiona with this earlier, who called me in because their head of child safeguarding was a paedophile and had been arrested. This is something every college I know dreads, but it happened, and they were completely CRB checked and everything. And the way that that crisis was managed has actually improved the trustworthiness for that organisation. They're now considered more highly than they were before they had that crisis. But when I got the phone call, I thought, oh, can't you ask somebody else? Because it was good grief, you know, how are we going to deal with this? But it went very well, and for all the right reasons. Because when we do the leadership reputation course, we do a lot on crisis management. Because in every crisis, there's a huge opportunity, and if you're not prepared, qualified, and able to take those opportunities, then you're not going to get the benefits out of them, mainly because when you've got a crisis, everyone comes and looks at you. But until you have a crisis, they often ignore you when you're jumping up and down saying, we're really good, come and see us. When things go wrong there, they'll all be. So it's how you manage it that makes the difference. And your responsibility, as I said earlier, to your local community and those around you, how responsibly you take your role in that community. And your leaders, I think you should be leading the local community. I think when something goes wrong across town, you should have something to say about it, because you're important, you're part of the future of that area, economically, socially, and in many ways, and so you should be leading. Reputations and relationships exist whether you do something about it or not. You'll have one. The point is, are you managing it and do you understand it? And positive differences can be made by thoughtful boards, which include public relations directors chosen according to their depth of knowledge and experience, which I hope has become clear. Research in 2000 showed that reputation's definitely affected by bad behaviour and low morale. You probably knew that. Your staff are fed up. They're going to moan down the pub. That's your reputation affected. But you probably don't know that it's hardly at all affected by all the business as good as usual good news stories that your department pumps out. It hardly affects the reputation because people... But it does affect the morale. So I'm not saying stop doing it, stop doing the happy stories and the success stories, but just remember why you're doing it. Understand this is why you need someone who's qualified to do the job, so that because the staff like to see them, because that's where they work and they like to talk about it. And they like it if someone says, oh, saw your college on the telly tonight, doing very well. But it isn't affecting it isn't actually developing the reputation as much as you might think. And if you did some research before and after a good story on a reputation audit, you might see that it isn't moved very much. After a bad news story, it will have moved. And so those are the things you've got to focus on. Where are the bad news stories going to come from, and how are they going to be prevented, and how is the crisis going to be managed? Most relationships, this research proved, are with people who have no consequence. Tend to build relationships with your friends. The famous example of this is Tesco's and Greenpeace sitting down together to discuss refrigerants. They would be considered enemies, but once they actually got together to talk about something as important as that, the relationships that relationship improved, but it made a difference. So you must sort out who you're avoiding, who you're hiding from, who you don't like to talk to, because that's the relationship that's perhaps going to make a difference to your organisation. And the research also showed that PR must be at the leadership level. So a bit of a broken record, but very important. And I mentioned earlier, if your reputation's out of step with the messages that are going out, you get huge inertia. And if it's in step with the messages, you get massive energy. Yes, I know that is what that place is about. I've been there. It's great. You build on that energy. Don't try to go against the flow. Network Rail now say working for a better railway. That's okay. You get off and get on the bus and go round by from Dawlish to Exeter because the sea's crashing over, that's okay. Things are getting better. But if you're told we're getting there and you're getting off and getting on the bus, it makes you a bit cross. So remember to tell the truth and put those messages in line. The CBI have done research to show that public relations is the best suited to the business of building loyalty and advocacy. And reputation, this is so important. I've just actually made an appointment with Biz to redo this research. But 4 or 5 years ago, they did a piece of research that showed that it now represents 70% of a business assets sheet. 70% is the reputation. On the board of directors, by and large, the top 100 FTSE companies were researched, and they didn't have anybody qualified to look after their reputation on their boards. They had lawyers and accountants looking after 30% of the balance sheet. So the 70%, which is really at the heart of the organisation's future, same for you as a business, was not being cared for by a qualified person. So that's a vital thing to remember. This is a bit of a dig, and I hope you'll all see who I'm digging at here, but those who choose ex-journalists, not you, not you.
Recovering journalists.
Ex-journalists to advise them in the hope they'll be better able to influence news editors are only going to receive a small part of the influence that they seek and very little, if anything, of the relationships that they need. So I had to, when David Cameron and the editor of the News of the World fell apart, I couldn't help but smile, and I wasn't president of the CIPR at the time, and had I been, I would have been banging the drum because it was such an opportunity for the organisation to say, look, this is what happens. That person, that appointment was made through fear. He probably thought, who do I fear most? The News of the World, get the devil in and advise me. You don't build your reputation and relationships on working with the thing you fear most. You need to understand it and have regular conversations with the things you fear most, but you need a lot more expertise and depth of knowledge than just that one part about relationships, and that's really the important thing. Aristotle wrote, because obviously public relations is about truth, so we have to study ethics. And Aristotle wrote 10 books on ethics, and 2 of them were about friendship, which is the purest form of a relationship, really. And in a friendship, you need 3 things for it to exist. So you can now examine all your friendships and see if you're really friends or if you're just the 500 people on Facebook are not your real friends. This is a real danger to young people. They think they've got all these friends. But anyway, you probably have 4 or 5. The things that matter are sharing pleasures. That's easy. You can put on events that your friends, the people you want to have as friends will enjoy, and you can share pleasures with them. Being useful to one another, but you know how the people you need to have relationships are useful to you. How useful are you being? How many of your students are parents? Where do they dump their children? How useful are you to the members of staff who are carers of elderly relatives? How useful are you being to the people who matter to you? So you need to consider that in detail. And being committed to a common good, this is the values point. It has to be values-led. Do they know what your values are? How have you arrived at those values? Did you go on a lovely away day to a hotel and drink too much and do them the next day and then laminate them and put them on a wall somewhere? Or are they lived? Values that are laminated and not lived are not going to do you any good. And people can't align themselves with you. So make sure that people understand your values. This is my one bit of jargon, publics. So I mentioned it before. We won't go into detail, but I am a pedant about it. But it summed up as if you spend a month showing genuine interest in someone else's concerns, you're likely to form a friendship. That's obvious, isn't it? Really? But you can spend 10 years only putting forward your own concerns, and you can end up very lonely. That's what you all do. You all talk about yourselves all the time. Go to the party. Think of yourselves at that party with the person that talks about themselves all night. Aren't you having fun? It's not fun. But if somebody says, how are things with you, and ask you questions about yourself, and then show interest in what you say, that's a really nice person. They've shown an interest and they've taken care of what you've said, and they might even offer some advice and friendship and support. This is a relationship building. It's mutual, of course, but we do far too much talking about ourselves and not enough listening and talking to other people. Here's some of your publics. This lot are not one group of people. They come from all sorts of different backgrounds, but they share something, which is what a public does. Who are your priority publics? What are they concerned about? Are any of them listening to you at the moment when you go out and scream? Or have they got something bigger and more important on their minds? Have you got anything to say about what's more important and on their minds than what you're saying already? If your publics are worried about knife crime, haven't you got anything to say about knife crime? Are you not worried about it too? Could you not put on an event to discuss it with the local police and council leaders? Or are you too afraid to do that because it might look like knife crime comes from FE? Because I tell you, without you doing it, that's what people might think. Because very often if someone's caught in a stabbing or part of a gang that's got a knife, they'll say if they go to the local FE college every time. So the connection might already be made, and you're not managing that connection. You're not managing that message. I'm not telling you you've all got to put on conferences about knife crime. I think maybe it's something that an umbrella FE organisation could do for you, with you. I tried to persuade the AOC to do it once, and I called it wicked, why I carry knives every day. And I've got to stop. But they haven't had the courage to do it yet. But I'm still on the case. But you've got to be able to talk about things that other people are interested in rather than what you're only interested in. The mission statement is not about communicating what you think you want people to believe. It's about communicating or creating an understanding of why you're there and what you do. So, again, it's got to... Basically, put across the basic values. You're probably measuring outputs, how many column inches and how much time on the radio and all of this. Doesn't mean a thing. What you need to be measuring is outcomes. What difference are you making with those things? Have you changed any attitudes? Have you altered any behaviours? So look out for, when you hire your public relations person, okay, they're going to say stakeholders. I'm not going to get over that one. But just ask them what they mean by stakeholders, because you define stakeholders, publics define themselves. If you're going to be interested in someone and talk to them, you've got to know how they define themselves. It's a very rich and important overlooked area. Make sure they understand reputation and hopefully issues management. Make sure they know what public relations is about. And essentially, if public relations is practiced professionally, it should be striving for consensus. The collaboration messages I really liked and have written them all down for future use. Through openness and honesty, to build mutual trust so that the techniques adapt to suit the needs of all involved, and behaviour change occurs equally for all parties in the discussion, not just those you're trying to change, but how are you changing? When you've been in a serious debate with a local community group, how have you changed as a result of that? Or are you just proud that you made them listen to what you had to say? Because honestly, that isn't going to help. You've got to shift and move with them. Where PR exists, there will be change, but if it's professional PR, that change will be for the better. Because professional public relations people aren't creating smoke screens. They're not creating diversions, but they're making things better for everyone. So thank you very much for your time.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from policyreview.tv. For more details, go to www.policyreview.tv. Please note that this audio is subject to copyright and cannot be used by other broadcasters or for commercial gain.